On ABC Radio,
this is The Big Fish
with Scott Levi.
Ahoy there! Great to have you on board. All the crew are back. Stinker coming up soon. We catch up with Peachy on the mighty Hawkesbury chasing bass. And a cracking first cast for you this morning on The Big Fish, catching the yellow fever on the south coast with the beard. The yellowfin are on and everyone's getting into the action. As reported on The Big Fish, there's been an epic run of yellowfin on the south coast. And, of course, our man on the coast, down that way, the beardy boy from Bega. Beardy, good morning.
All right. Morning, Scott. How are you?
I know if there's something on the fishing grapevine, you're the first to hear. And it's great to see you've cashed in some beautiful yellowfin for sashimi. The beard family eats again tonight.
Yeah. Well, it's nice being that, like, you know, you're sort of being like the tuna dealer for a few days, you know,
yeah,
you're sort of
yeah.
driving around to mates, handing out bags, you know,
yeah.
And everyone's just like, everyone's so frothing when they get a bag. And actually, and then it's actually you're sort of ingratiating yourself a bit because you sort of, I've had bread baked for me in return, you know, beers, like everyone's just like, everyone just loves it, you know, so it's, and there's so much of it, like on one fish, that it's like, you know, there's plenty, like we've been smoking it, we've been preserving it, we've been having sashimi and sharing it around. So it's happy, happy days.
We're talking about yellowfin tuna here, just in case someone's just tuned into The Big Fish at this time of the morning and hear the beard on the
talking
south
about
coast.
Bags.
Talking
yeah.
about smoking bags and bartering for other stuff. But this is bags of beautiful pink, red flesh. I mean, it is just A-grade sashimi, isn't it? And so versatile, but gee, cooking it is so important that you just grill the outside and leave it medium rare in the middle, rare in the middle. That's important, or it can get a bit dry.
Well, yeah, I don't know. We haven't we've barely cooked any. We actually one of the sessions from a few weeks ago, we got a couple of albacore, and we sort of seared some of that, and that was delicious.
Mm.
But I think all the yellowfin we've either just had it poke bowls and sashimi and stuff, or smoked it. So I've got a freezer chock full of smoked fish, which has been pretty nice too. But yeah,
what's your method for curing and smoking, Beardy?
Oh, I've got my own kind of like brine that someone taught me from the I think he was from Samoa. It's like using brown sugar, soy, a bit of whiskey, and a little bit of lemon, and that's the brine, like a wet brine. So that's for 3 to 4 hours or something. But I've got other mates who they just take it up to the butcher and give them a case of beer and get them to smoke it for them. And all theirs comes coming back tasting very, very, very similar to ham.
they just
put it in the ham brine.
Just beautiful. Yeah, it can be a little salty, but fantastic. Fantastic yeah. fish. And then what do you do with it after you've pulled it out of the freezer when you've smoked it and cryovacked it?
It depends. Like, we'll actually mix up we'll put that in like a fried rice sometimes. But the main thing I'll do with the smoked stuff is make like a creamy smoked tuna pasta. So you're talking kind of preserved lemon, bit of dill, capers, you know, cream, you know, and then you just mix that. Mix that fish, sort of flake it through it. It's delicious.
And if you run into Beardy at the tackle shop at Marimba, you'll notice that his eyes are very bright, his beard is shining, and his muscles are bulging. That's pure protein, that stuff, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, you know, eyes are also wide because it's just where, you know, you're sitting in that shop and you're just looking at stick baits all day, of which there are very little now, because I think all the tackle shops down here would be the same. Like, you know, they just went through so many stick bait rods, and reels, like anything from, like, you know, any reel that was like a 14,000 spin reel up was just, you know, you just couldn't get one, because everyone just wanted a piece of the action. So
wow, it's an amazing run, isn't it? What are some of the theories as to why they've been so thick on the south coast. And then we'll talk about techniques. It's the beard on the big fish on the epic yellowfin run of 2025. You'll be, when your beard's all grey and old and you're in the rocking chair, you'll, I remember the run of 25. Those yellowfin were jumping in the boat.
There's like it's not an exaggeration actually, because people down here have been like, I've heard various kind of estimates at it, but like people saying that it's like it hasn't been like this for 50 years, you know, for 30 years, like and a lot of it is they're just like an in closer than ever before. Like, you know, you normally have to push like beyond the shelf to access them, but a lot of these, a lot of the appearances of these fish have been in like 120 meters, you know, and even shallower than that in some cases. So in terms of why, I mean, I haven't heard any sort of anything kind of solid. There was one tackle shop owner I talked to in Bateman's Bay last week, and he was just like, it's just off the back of like multiple La Niñas. You know, like lots of rain, lots of nutrients, you know, the cycle of life. And he expects this next year might do the same thing, but then it might back off a bit.
And maybe better management as well, perhaps. Maybe the pros are, you know, minimizing issues and the amateurs are being less greedy, I guess.
Potentially. I think there's been a fair bit of greed from the recos, but everyone's just been too excited.
You don't need too many of them, do you? And there's a very strict bag as well. They're big fish.
That's the thing, you know. And like the smallest models of that people have been talking about a lot are 15 kilos. And the biggest one I've heard about is sort of 70-ish, something like that. But you know, a fair few in the 40s and whatever. But yeah, so exactly. And the guys who have been going out and absolutely braining them, I mean, like some of the sessions have been like up to 30 fish days. They have their release techniques down pat, you know. So I haven't had any of those days, so I haven't had that problem. Like, so we've been getting fish that are sort of like 25 kilos, you know, up to 30.
How big were those ones that you've sent me the photos of? I mean, they felt heavy on the phone. They looked like, they weren't like our mate you spoke about. Oh boy, when was
he? He got a 60.
Back on it was the 19th of July, Saturday the 19th of July. I remember it well, and you told us about
there you go. 63 kilos.
The boy with the 63 kilo one, which weighed down the back of the boat. He was right out on the shelf, and he put in hours and hours and hours of work to, you know, years to get that. But the ones you got would really barrel beautiful, big fish and very fat, but great feed. I mean, that would feed you for the rest of the year almost.
Yeah, I mean, pretty well. Like, you know, I guess it depends how many friends you have. How many favours you need to repay.
A lot more after this. They were good-looking fish. How big were they, Beardy?
Yeah, like 25 to 30. You know, big enough that like it's, even if you wanted to hold it closer to the camera to make it look bigger,
your arms wouldn't allow it.
You couldn't, you know, like, I'm not that strong, you know, but like big enough that you can hold them standing up, you know, like, you know, that like the big ones when like they have to stand them on their nose or sit them on their lap.
You had these ones sort of clutched to your chest and I can tell you were straining with a great smile too, because they're epic fish. And take us through the technique. It sounds like stick baits, and that's pretty exhilarating and exciting if they're smashing, you know, presentations on or close to the surface.
Yeah, and that's like, I don't know, everyone knows like how good surface fishing is, but throwing them into a bust up of big fish close to the boat, like one of the ones I sent you, I think that was the best eat of my life. Like, and that was like casted into a bust up, you know, like maybe 20 meters away, you know, high speed retrieve, you know, watch one come up, swipe, miss, another one come up, swipe, miss, and then the one that takes it is like 3 meters from the boat and just goes down, you know. Just so fun. Super exhilarating. One of the sessions we ran out there, we did troll for a little bit, and that's how we picked up the albies. But pretty soon, you know, you don't want to troll. Like, no one wants to troll if you can have that surface sort of fishing. But it was just you know, different days. Like, some days, like, they were just you could just have your pick from the surface. But other days, you know, it was they just weren't sort of coming up. So you might sort of think about trolling then. But invariably, you sort of if you waited long enough, you'd probably get your opportunity.
So it was close enough to the boat for you to see one come zooming in and have a swipe at it.
Oh, yeah.
Another one come zooming in and have a swipe at it. Yep. And obviously you're wearing your Polaroids and it's clear water.
Yeah.
And then right near the boat, the last one's come zooming in and nailed it.
Just boom. Yeah.
Wow, that's hard in mouth stuff.
On a 200 mil stick bait. With two big singles on it.
And what are they replicating? What are they bailing up? What's the bait?
Well, I mean, a lot of the stuff that was coming out of their guts was micro, you know? So it's like, it was that situation where you're throwing a huge stick bait at them, but they're revved up enough. They're competing with each other enough that, you know, that they're willing to have a go at it, because you'd sort of open them up and you'd see, like just tiny, tiny bait, maybe the odd gar. The ones that we weren't seeing a lot of souries when we were out there. Oh, actually, we did see some showering, but we weren't finding them in their guts. So,
well, souries and gar would be the most closest to a stick bait, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
shape.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway.
Yeah, like we didn't need to downsize in lure size to try to, you know, get them to feed. Like, that was just, you know, there was that surface activity, they were revved up enough. But
and they'll rip your arms off. I mean, they go so hard. I was just looking to see a yellowfin bag limit in New South Wales, 7 in total, which is too many, I think, but no more than 2 fish over 90. Yeah. But after one or two, that'd do you, wouldn't it? I mean,
yeah, well,
you'd be absolutely buggered.
I'll be going into next year with I'll be working on my left arm a little bit, I think, just with the dumbbells.
Yeah,
just trying to
tighten up, wouldn't it? I mean, that they circle and go side on and they really fight hard. I've caught smaller, I caught a 10-kilo mac tuna once and that was, you know, an incredible fight. It was big for that species, but these things are triple, double that size.
Oh, yeah, and like I didn't get like a really big one, but I was stuffed enough. I mean, they and that's like, just to give you an idea. Like, I'm using a 14,000 size spin reel that I think with 65 pound on it, and like drag wise, I can just pull it off the reel. Like, that's how tight the drag is. And they were just taking it. they just take it as they wanted it, you know. Just emptied a couple hundred metres.
Where it is worth having a decent quality spinning reel with good ball bearings, good drag. I mean, you can't do it on the cheap, really, can you? You need something that's going to hold up to that sort of punishment.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, you know, otherwise you sort of... What are you doing? You're sort of chasing them, you don't want like a super, super prolonged fight. Like, it's going to be long enough anyway, probably. I don't think it was a good balance. Like, I've got, a mate was running in, he was using an 8,000 reel. So he's sort of, you know, line capacity, he isn't a crazy amount of line, but that was enough to bring in a 50 kilo for him.
Wow, that's epic. And you can use that outfit for big jewies in the estuary and that sort of stuff. It's still quite useful. I mean, you wouldn't use it all the time.
For kings outside and stuff.
The kingies, Bushy makes his own stick baits for the kingies down your way, and no doubt he's been out after the yellowfin as well. He wouldn't miss out. But
I can guarantee they have yellowfin have eaten Bushy lures in the last sort of couple of months. It's just been crazy.
Absolutely fantastic. ABC, it's the big fish and the beard out of the south coast. And where are some of the ports that people are launching from? Eden is a great place to go out to sea, but you're a bit further north of there. Where have people been catching? Where have they been schooling up?
Well, I mean, like everywhere, depending on where the temperature break has been, offshore, everywhere from, well, I haven't personally sort of heard reports about, like, you know, up sort of north of Ulladulla and stuff, but, you know, everywhere from Batemans Bay to Eden, definitely. We've been out of Tathra, a couple of times out of Burmese twice. But yeah, like Narooma, Murrumbula, Eden, like all those joints. And it's been sort of, and we've had a couple of times where it's like, okay, well that's going to be the last of it. You know, that, that warm water's pushed down, you know, and that's going to be the last of it. And then, you know, the wind switched and the currents, like the cold waters come back up, you know, and with it have come the fish. So it's sort of had been that teased out thing where it's like September, everyone's going like, oh, this still shouldn't be happening. And then it's October, like, oh my God, it's still happening. So yeah, it's been amazing for a lot of people. Like tackle shops have just been loving it.
As you said, they're running out of gear for the bigger fish because a lot of that stuff, you average recreational anglers chasing flathead or snapper and they're you know, or brim in the estuary or whiting, and they're not really going for that bigger stuff, but I believe the bigger stuff's been walking off the shelves.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's I think like the pickle for them is like, you know, they need to like, they want to meet demand, right? But they don't want to overcompensate, you know, and then have all this stock that they can't shift for another year.
Exactly. And what about the temperature break? What are you talking about? What's the variation in temperature, and what's it look like when you find the spot where the fish are?
Well, when we were out there, it was, you know, on one side of it, it was 16.5 degrees. And then on the warmer side, it was like north of 18 or around 18. So that was kind of the differential. I think it was pretty much like similar for most of the trips that we did out there.
And you see a difference in the colour of the warmer water compared to the cooler water?
I didn't per se. You could actually sort of see the current line out there in some places. But actually beyond that, like, I've never seen that many birds, like mutton birds and albatross and stuff, like just insane amounts of birds and dolphins. Like, I don't go offshore heaps, right? So I'm, you know, I'm used to seeing like pods of 20, 50 dolphins like around headlands and whatever. But out there, it's like football field of that, you know, hundreds of dolphins over here. And then there's another one, like thousands and thousands of dolphins feeding on the same bait, presumably. You can't put a cast in because there's just too many dolphins. Like,
wonderful. How far offshore did you have to go to get that?
Well, the dolphins weren't that far out. They were sort of between 10 and 15 Ks. And then, but the widest we went for tuna was probably out to the shelf, you know, and like around or just before the shelf.
That's a fair haul. Yeah. It's great. What about the inshore scene? We've been smacking the flathead here. I must say, I went out with the soft plastics with the boys on Monday night and got six beautiful flathead between sort of 40 and 60 centimetres, just nice. right. And I've filleted them up on the hot night, you know, when it was 30 plus, I had sweat dripping off my nose, cutting all the bones out, taking the skin off, you know, I'm sweating. You know, they catch them and then they make me cut, but they loved it. The young blokes loved it and they got the technique worked out. We had a great time. I lost three at the boat as well. It was funny, they were just, I put some secret sauce on the soft plastic, had about a 1/6 jig head and a paddle tail, and they were fishing the good side of the boat with the wind, and I'm just sort of dangling over the side, you know, throwing into the wind, and I don't have an electric, we're just drifting along nature's electric motor, and I got three to the side of the boat, and I said, get the net, and the young bloke grabbed the net, and I couldn't see the jig in its mouth. It was right down in its tummy, and they just spat it out. I think it was something to do with the angle of the dangle, the way I was fishing, you know, that I had three of them, and they wanted that jig so much they were sucking the sauce off it, then spat it out right at the boat. So,
yeah, right.
But that was all right. We got six, which was plenty enough for a feed for everyone in the family. So that was good fun. And they were just on the drop-offs on the low tide, you know, where I thought they'd be. It's nice when a plan comes together, you know, they were schooled up along the edges of the weed beds and the drop-offs, and we just went out in the little 10-foot boat, and it was great fun targeting them. They disperse a bit on high tide, so the good low tide's in the middle of the day, and the moon phase, and the prawns are moving too. I think the moon phase has the prawns moving, and they were spitting out prawns when I got them in the net, so happy days, mate. Flathead for dinner tonight.
Yeah, well, like the flatties have definitely come on down here as well. I haven't actually given them a nudge myself, but one of the days actually went out targeting yellowfin, and we donutted that day. So we came back sort of, you know, in that horrible space where, you know, you've caught nothing and it feels bad and you're trying to say stuff like, well, at least we don't have to do any filleting, you know, and it just doesn't help anybody.
No, no.
Anyway, but we had my mate's young fella with us.
Yeah.
And after we cleaned up and stuff and we went home to do jobs or whatever, and it was school holidays, and he went down with his mates down to the river, and he, while he was down there, his old man gets a call, like, get down here. Like, get down here. They didn't have a brag mat or whatever. Caught a 97 flatty.
Oh, what a beast. I know. What a beast.
I think it was just a 3 to 4 inch paddle tail.
Yeah.
But it was on light gear. Like, I don't know how he sort of wrangled this thing.
Lucky
himself,
it didn't chafe him off. Must have been hooked in the lip and she swam away to breed.
Yeah, she did. And it was amazing, like, how wide that head.
They've got a head like a shovel, those big girls, haven't they? They're just incredible.
Well, it was, and that was it. The dimensions were most shovel-like. Like, I've never seen, like, a head so wide in the photo.
Well, this releasing the breeders is really, I think, having an impact on my local estuary. There are definitely a lot more fish, and I think it's a great thing, you know, what we're doing. And most people obviously handling them well, keeping them in the water, not lifting them by the head and putting a hand under the belly. But, yeah, 97, that's an absolute beauty. A few photos and she swam away.
Yeah, and I like, you know, this kid's like 12 or something.
Oh, wow, so off the shore.
Yeah, yeah. So he's peaked way too early. You know, he's ruined his life.
That's right.
You know, he's like, and he's gone up from like a former PB of, I think it was 65 or something.
Yeah, right.
You know, so where's he going to go now?
Like, it's magic. And now he'll be on the quest forevermore for the meter plus, the magical meter plus, which is not easy to find.
Yeah. No, but it was good that he was able to, like, turn around what was sort of not a great day initially.
So this is down in the Bega River, down Tarthra?
Yeah. I don't know exactly where.
Well, hasn't that estuary kicked on since the nets were taken out? It's a recreational fishing haven now, and it's a great fishery right up and down. Hey, wonderful stuff. I'm waiting for that bag of smoked tuna in the mail, Beardy.
I'll send you a jar of preserved stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's great. Gee,
that stuff's the bomb.
Really utilised it all, and it's lovely to chop it up. You know, you put on your headband and you get your sashimi knives out and pretend you're a master from Tokyo and slice it all up. It's all on YouTube. You can't go wrong.
No, it's good. It's been really good times.
Tight lines, mate. Thanks for telling us all about it.
No dramas. Good on you, Scott.
There's the Beard on the south coast on the Big Fish.
There's a singing single, a sell in celebrity. There's a rage in marriage. There's a grave in gravy. There's a dump in dumpling, a liver in delivery. There's a pay in every patriot, and a spit in hospitality. But there's a tuna, there's a tuna, there's a tuna in every opportunity. Chunk light or Abercore, guess who's knocking at your door? It's the tuna of opportunity.
All right.
If you take the two A's out of aardvark, if you take the two L's out of llama, if you take the two O's out of ooze, put them all together, they spell hello. But there's a tuna, there's a tuna, there's a tuna in every opportunity. Chunk light or Abacore, guess who's knocking at your door? It's the tuna of opportunity. There's a dye in every diet. There's a gas in gastrointestinal tract. There's a man in mental illness. And ovary and overreact. Yes, there's a tuna. There's a tuna. There's a tuna in every opportunity. Chunk light or Abacore. Guess who's knocking at your door? It's the tuna of opportunity. Oh, water, oil, or ahi. You should give it a try. the tuna of opportunity.
On ABC Radio, it's The Big Fish with Scott Levi. On ABC Radio, it's The Big Fish with Scott Levi.
Here comes Stinker with his fishing tips. Some hot advice for your fishing trip. Where to find them? What's the bait?
Are you catching any, mate?
No, he's always up to something, folks. It's Stinker on The Big Fish. He's just about to launch into Stinker's shallow water snapper safari. G'day, mate.
Hey, g'day, Scott. It's my last bait hurrah. Because remember last week I spoke to you that I was going to jump onto the dark side, that being the plastic brigade, which I've fished with plastics before with success. But I do enjoy the hunt, if that's a reasonable term, because it just seems to me that anchoring and burleying and floating a bait down a burley trail is a more traditional method of capture, and it doesn't take quite so much activity. You can sit on your backside and let all the fish do that. So yeah, this week for the next few days, I'm going to be starting on Fingal Island, fishing the washes and the shallow water, and then I'll move north to Bundaberg Island, which we rarely talk about on this program, which is a fantastic fishing island. It's out straight out through the heads at Port Stephens. If you head straight out east in the middle of Port Stephens, straight out to sea, you'll bump into Bundaberg. And then there's Little Island, which is even further out to sea, not much, and it's surrounded by bait fish. So I'll have I'll float a few baits around there. Then, of course, the end of the line is Broughton, and I know exactly where to go there. So then we'll have pack some fish away, and we'll have fish for the next couple of months, which I'm looking forward to the adventure.
When you say shallow water, Stinker, what sort of depth are you talking?
Oh, gee, amazingly shallow. I mean, we talk 4 metres. You'll catch big fish in 4 metres. 4 to 15 metres. That's what I call shallow. That's, 12 feet to around about 45 feet. Mm. And that's what I call shallow water snapper fishing. And really, if you're fishing, I'm only using 20-pound mono with a 6-0 or a 7-0 hook. And what I do is I'll be using a cube of yellowtail, or if I can get them, a full fillet, a strip of slimy, which I will hook on one end. I'll put the hook through it. No lead in the shallow water, no lead. And then just let it float down, and then whacko. And then the interesting part is, because you know you're in shallow water, tiger country, you take off the pressure. You don't put pressure on, because if they go over a ledge, it's bing, and you lose the lot. So just be patient and let them have a good old swim, and then just slowly, slowly make ground on them, and you'll find you'll get them. But it just take you a little bit longer to get them in the boat.
Yeah, that happened with that monster one I got that was bigger than Stink Pot. It's getting bigger all the time. It was a big fish, wasn't it? And it got me. I stopped, and I could just feel the dull pulse of it somewhere down there amongst the kelp and the other undergrowth or whatever's down there. And you said, just sit on it, Scotty. Just hang on. That's a big fish. That's a big fish. Just wait a while. And I waited and waited and waited, and then it swam out. Miraculously, yep. Swam out, and I was back in the fight. And we got it, which was, wow, that was exciting, wasn't it? I think that's the only time I've hugged you, Stinker.
Well, see, that particular day, I dropped the anchor in 30 foot of water. I remember the day well. I dropped the anchor in 30 foot of water, 10 metres, and then there was a bit of a cliff face. And so it dropped down to about 60 feet of water. But we were anchored in shallow water, fishing over a ledge into deeper water. And that the results were quite spectacular on that day. I can remember, one of the most incredible days I've ever been fishing for snapper, actually.
Yeah, that was a big fish. I had just an absolute monster of a beast of a thing. And you reckon you'll be cured of your bait addiction, Stinker? This will be your last go. You'll be weaned off after this trip?
Oh, I don't think so. I think this bait thing I've been doing for a lifetime. I might just have plastics in the boat, and when I'm sort of over fishing with my bait, I'll have a couple of tosses with the plastic. But yeah, the only time, you see, you're a little bit restricted when I'm fishing in shallow water. I like some rock and roll. Now, if you've got a dicky back, it's not ideal, especially in an 11-foot guinea, where you rock and roll and up and down and, oh dear, all over the place. So if you want to fish in deep water on a calmer day, well, that's okay. And your back will be very sensual. But, I've got to sort of start modifying my methods of fishing as time marches on. And I'm not as tough as I think I used to be. So, we'll see what happens. But I know some wonderful country. And something else I mentioned recently too. There is country here within 5 kilometres of my house that you rarely, if ever, see anyone fishing. And I know it's magnificent snapper habitat. So 1 week I'm going to go and fish these places that I haven't seen fish for over 40 years. So in different conditions, more likely a nor'easter or westerly winds, which are common winds during the summer months.
It's much more fun in that shallower water, isn't it, than plummeting down with a half a pound of snapper lead into the depths. It's just not the same, is it? But I tell you what you can do. If you're going to go over to soft plastics, you can buy those gel stimulants. You know, the stuff, it smells pretty bad, that you rub on your plastic. It's supposed to have amino acids and bite stimulants, and it's got a sticky base, and there's, you know, tuna flavour or mullet flavour or pilchard flavour, and it stinks. So if you still want to have the smell of bait fishing, but with soft plastics, maybe rub some of that stuff on.
Well, Scott, there's one old thing I was taught many, many years ago by my father in the tackle industry, and he said, many gimmicks are made to catch fishermen and not fish.
Oh, I don't know. I was using this stuff on some of that bite stimulant on the plastics for the flathead the other day. We got some beauties. We got a lovely feed of 6 flathead between the three of us, which is plenty enough. You know, fish around the 40 to 50 centimetres, and I had a bit of bloodworm scent on it. And one fish I got, I couldn't see the big plastic. It swallowed it right down the tummy and then spat it out. But I think, I don't know, who knows? Maybe it's the smell to attract the fisher people rather than the fish stinker.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting thing, because if you go out with any sort of a lure, it doesn't matter what it is, and you throw it in the water and you catch a fish, you think, this is the greatest lure in Australia. And you use it, and you might have a tackle box with 20 lures in it, but because you caught one fish with one lure, well, I'm not going to risk using any other lure because this lure works. And I'm going. And then come the plastics, I remember, there were a few colours that they said, oh, these colours are so deadly. So everyone would go and buy those particular colours. Then they'd find another colour that was deadly. Then another one. And by the time they'd find out that every colour was deadly, that it was more the movement and the motion of the plastic that was more attractive than whatever colour it was. But look, it's... another old saying, of course, is if it works, keep doing it. That's another one. I mean, these things aren't very complicated, but they are, if you look at them, it's very, very simple, and it makes a lot of sense. So whatever you use, if you throw a boiled egg out and you catch a good fish, go and buy a dozen eggs.
Hey, Stinker, I think it's about time for breakfast. Tight lines, mate. Good to have you back.
Hey, Ray Scott.
It's the Big Fish, and Peachy, we've just come off the river after a great day on the mighty Hawkesbury. What a system, what a beautiful place, but an interesting place to fish for freshwater fish like bass.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the tidal stretches of the Hawkesbury, I think, probably don't get as much of a look as they deserve from bass fishing. Everybody sort of knows that bass are, you know, a catadromous fish that live in fresh water and travel down to the salt water to spawn in the cooler months. But what a lot of people don't realise is there's a lot of fish that will stay down in the tidal stretches of the river for the whole season. And certainly you can fish right through the middle of summer and the whole season down in the tidal stretches of the Hawkesbury, which are really, really extensive and can provide some great fishing.
We probably caught 20-odd fish between us. I would think best being 30-something centimetres, which was a decent bass. A lot of small fish. But it doesn't matter with bass, does it?
No, that's right. It's all about the surface take. The surface take is just, you know, fantastic. It's great fun. Just, you know, your fly goes down and there's something on the end. You don't know if it's going to be a 20-centimetre bass or it could be even a 40 or 45-centimetre bass on the end of it. It's just, you know, part of the fun. We do tend to get quite a lot of small fish, which I think is a great sign. But, you know, in amongst them, there are some really good fish as well. And, you know, every sort of three or four fish, you'll tend to come across a really good one.
And we were catching bass. They weren't estuary perch, were they? And yet we're fishing stretches with lots of mangroves, she oaks, weed beds. You know, the mangroves give it away, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think people probably don't realise how far down the system bass will come. You know, there's, I don't know how many kilometres, but there's probably hundreds of kilometres of the Hawkesbury that is fishable for bass.
Yes, and you would think they'd be estuary perch, particularly when you're fishing around the mangroves.
Yeah, and look, you know, certainly there are estuary perch in the system. They tend to be a little bit lower down than the bass, but there's definitely a crossover zone. Particularly in this stretch that we've been fishing, you do tend to come across some pretty large estuary perch sometimes. And, you know, it's always a great sight when you see a big silver-sided EP come up and eat a fly off the surface. It's great.
All catch and release, of course. I don't think I've ever killed a bass. Probably the same for you.
No, I've certainly never killed a bass. And, you know, yeah, as you said, barbless flies, single hook, it's the way to do it. It's, you know, you release the fish in absolutely great condition and they swim away for another day.
Take us through that fly again, because we've spoken about it before, but I understand more about its construction now. And it wasn't, even though it took, 20-odd fish, there's not a cicada in sight at the moment. When the cicadas are, I'm sure it just goes ballistic. But you put a lot of work into your famous Peachy cicada. I know on your YouTube channel there's a how-to. But, gee, it's a well-constructed fly. For a foam fly, it's got a really natural look, particularly from underneath. It casts like a dart. It's just brilliant.
Yeah, I went through a lot of terrible failed iterations of cicada flies before I kind of arrived at this one. And, you know, I it's a bit of a Frankenstein in a sense. I put together a few different elements that I had seen on a few different flies and combined them. The big one for me that I struggled the most with was getting the wing right. You see, I really wanted a pattern where the wings spread out on the water when the fly lands, but when the fly is being cast in the air, the wings will fold back along the body so that it doesn't spin in the air or interfere with the way that the fly casts.
It's like a stealth bomber like that. The wings tuck in when you cast. It's very aerodynamic, and when it hits the water, the rubber legs and the crystal flash, brilliant. And then underneath, it's got a water-absorbing flashy chenille that sucks water in, so it sits low in the water as well, like a natural. It's really got a lot going for it. A lot of R&D there. A lot of time on the river, I'd reckon, Peachy.
Yeah, quite a bit. As I said, you know, I experimented with a lot of different things and found what worked and what didn't work. And a lot of it is just about not even so much about the appearance of the fly, but more about the way the fly behaves in the water and in the air. To get it right and to get a good hookup rate on the bass as well.
Yeah, that was really impressive. We were hooking tiny little fish, you know, the size of the palm of your hand. It's all about the take with bass. It's the big fish, and we're speaking with Peachy. We're up on the Hawkesbury after a great day on the bass. Bit early in the season yet. I really want to come back when those cicadas are drumming in the trees, Peachy, because then I reckon we'll have a red-letter day. And we had a few theories about where the bigger fish were. I got a nice one about 30-plus centimetres that really gave the old seven weight a good bend and took some line. But there were a lot of prawns moving and a lot of fish chasing prawns. It's really interesting, isn't it? Because it's a different dynamic to fishing the freshwater stretches of the Clarence or the Maclay or the Hastings or the Manning, you know, the big bass rivers up north or the Shoalhaven down south, because it's bizarre. You go up with the tide and the freshwater is sitting on top of the salt, and then you come back down as the tide runs out and fish the snags on the other side and the shady side.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, I think the interesting thing today as well with the prawns running was we were seeing a few prawns skipping on the surface. Mm. And often with cicada flies, I like to fish them dead. A lot of the time I find the bass take them best usually when you just leave them sitting still. Mm. But today we were having some luck with actually skipping them across the surface, and I think it was because the bass were tuned into prawns skipping on the surface.
I should have put on one of Peter Morse's prawn flies. I showed you some of those. They are just dynamite, and looking forward to summer coming around and putting those on our coastal lagoons wherever you are, from the Victorian border to the Queensland border. If you've got a sandy, shallow coastal lagoon full of whiting and brim, and you want to fly fish and you want to have fun and lots of hits and lots of takes and lots of splash, then try one of Morsi's prawn flies. They are just fantastic. Really, really wonderful fun. And if a brim is after it, pause it. And if a whiting's after it, strip it as hard as you can. Put the rod under your arm and pull with both hands. There's a lot of fly fishing, isn't there, Peachy? But this bass fishing, it's like playing darts or bowls or putting at golf. It is such a game within a game. There are so many wonderful shots you have, and oftentimes those fish will not move an inch from their bolt hole, and if you're not getting it in there, you won't catch a fish. It's fascinating, and you work it out, don't you? You have to do these over and under casts. I don't know, what's that one where you slap it into the water and the fly flies up and flicks right up under the bungee?
Yeah, a little skip cast.
The skip cast, yeah.
I don't think many people realise you can actually skip cast with a fly rod. But, yeah, in bass fishing, you do need to do that. And as you said, the key is really getting the fly right back into the structure, into the shade, against the bank and right up next to the snags. That's what I love so much about bass fishing on fly, is that it challenges your casting, it really challenges your skills, and if you do it consistently, it makes you a better angler.
Oh, absolutely. It's an engrossing game. Presenting it right, getting that shot right. And, of course, if you're not hooking up in the trees, in the bamboo, in the mangroves, in the she-oaks, you're not trying hard enough, are you? Every half an hour or so, you're back into the bank to untangle, or you lose a few flies. But it's interesting. I've had experiences on the Maclay River, particularly where I used to do a lot of bass fishing when I lived on the mid-north coast, where the lure fishers would fire into the spot where they sit, right up in the snag, and stir them up a bit. And I could see that they were interested. You see a bit of a boil come up, and you put the fly in and catch it all the time, and you'd often outfish the lure fishers. And it was nice to have a lure fisher on board, actually, because they'd often throw it in, but they can't leave it in there, can they? Unless it's a surface lure. But even then, you've got to impart some action. And they'll turn them on for you as a fly fisherman. Do you often outfish the lure boys in Bass Sydney?
It does happen. It does happen, yeah. Look, I think fly has a lot of advantages for bass in the sense that when a lure fisherman casts a lure into a snag for a bass, they've got to wind it all the way back to the boat before they can cast it again. Whereas with a fly, of course, we can get it straight into the strike zone, leave it there, and then pick it up and put it straight back into the strike zone again. And if our cast is not quite right, then we can just pick it up straight away and cast it again. So we get we actually get to make a lot more presentations, I think, than the lure fishermen do.
And also, you've got the measurement, haven't you? You know exactly to the millimetre where that fly is going to land, which is exactly where the fish took it in the first place, because you've measured that line out. You're holding the end of the line. And quite often, folks, I'll have a fly in there. There'll be a good boil under it, and I'll miss it, and I'll go to recast, and Peachy's in there like a shot, right on the spot.
Or you cast it back into the same spot and catch the fish on, you know, the second or third time that they strike at it, which happens, you know, remarkably often, doesn't it?
It's a lot of fun. Yeah. It's just great fun, isn't it? I think fishing should be fun. It's funny because I caught a big feed of flathead with the boys this week with my son and his mate, and I spent all last night filleting bloody flathead. Really nice fish, and they're great for a feed. And that was all about going out with soft plastics and catching fish. But this is pure sport, isn't it? And the good thing about those little flies, barbless hooks, very sharp, they don't damage the fish at all. I worry about a big mouthful of treble sometimes in some of those smaller bass.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, as you said, barbless hooks is the way to go. It's kinder to the fish. It's kinder to the anglers when you get one stuck in your own hand or or the back of your head or something. Yeah. And, you know, I don't think you lose many fish because of it. And with this sort of bass fishing, you tend to get a lot of hits, you catch quite a few fish, and if you drop one or two, then it's not the end of the world.
It's all about the hit, isn't it? You know, luring them up to smash it and give you that excitement, because they can really take. Sometimes they're subtle, don't they? They sip like a trout, but other times they'll whack it like you've dropped a brick in. We're just down at Spencer here on the Hawkesbury River, where we've launched and come upstream with the tide and then back downstream, and there are literally hundreds of kilometres of bank where the bass are. It's quite extraordinary how far the freshwater stretches down towards the salt. But they tend to gravitate further up the system as the season goes on and the freshwater slows down.
Look, I think they tend to be all throughout the system, to be honest with you. Certainly down in the, you know, the lower reaches, the lower tidal reaches, you can catch fish right throughout the season. There will be patches that fish better than others. But, you know, definitely all the way from, you know, Spencer, as you said, up to Yarramundi, where the salt water ends, you'll catch bass right through all of those stretches, all through the season.
But you could have days with a lot more fish than that, and bigger fish too, when the cicadas are really drumming in the trees. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, certainly. You know, on a good day in summer, on an average day in summer, I would usually expect to get 30 to 40 fish and maybe double that.
No, it was just great. Great sport, and I was using a 7-weight, quite a fast action rod. The old casting arm is going to fall off in a minute. I'm not quite used to it, but it is just so engrossing, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%, and you get used to casting around structure and obstacles and just being accurate with your fly and placing it and getting it into places that perhaps a lot of other anglers might not be comfortable to cast into. I think fly fishing, probably like all forms of fishing, really, it's not much to do with sort of physical strength or capability or even dexterity. A lot of it is the mental game of trying to understand what the fish are doing at any particular time and trying to come up with the right tactics to catch them. That's really what the sport's all about, I think.
It was Rob Sitch and Tom Gleisner used to say in a river somewhere, damn it, I've been fooled by a thing with the brain the size of a pea again.
Yeah, that's about right.
Peachy, it's been a great day on the river. I think we might adjourn to the Wiseman's Ferry pub, eh? We'll go upstream.
Yeah, sounds great.
It's a good old pub, isn't it?
It's a terrific place, yeah. We'll go and have a look at some of the old historic furniture and stuff they've got upstairs in the pub and maybe avail ourselves of a nice cold ale.
It's my shout, mate.
Sounds good.
Thanks for a great day on the river.
Cheers, Scott.
Where they're biting, how to catch 'em? It's on the Big Fish. Oh, get out of it, bloody seagulls.